What is the guitar part for Friends?
Friends?
Yeah.
A lot of 1975.
What is the influence from the Strokes? Give me the top five guitar players. Okay, talk to me about what's on your pedal board. What is the guitar sound of Laundry Day? Have you kind of honed
Today's
on?
Episode is sponsored by Gator Cases. Guitarists, like any other musician, value the advantages of proper protection for their gear. Guitars, amps, effects, and accessories all need safe transport and storage. Luckily, Gator's got you covered.
Henry Weingartner of Laundry Day on the podcast.
Yeah.
Laundry Day from New York. This is so exciting. I'm pumped that you're on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Henry.
Yeah.
How'd you learn how to play guitar?
Well, when I was a kid, my parents put me simultaneously in piano and guitar and then soccer. They were like, he'll like one of these things. We don't know which one. And then I didn't like soccer, evidently, because I'm not playing soccer right now. But I loved guitar, loved piano. And then from the time I was six, I just kept playing, was playing in bands. I was doing all sorts of like after school band programs, was in the Brooklyn House Band with my friends when we were like 11, 12, 13. And then, yeah, all the way up until got to high school and met the guys.
So did you take formal lessons or was it all kind of self-taught?
No, I took formal lessons from when I was about six to probably 11, 12. And then that's when I was doing it so much on my own that I felt like I didn't need the teacher to sort of motivate me anymore. I was just sort of doing it whenever I got a chance.
How do you view the fretboard? Like, are you viewing it through the caged system viral? Are you thinking pentatonic shapes? Like, when you're crafting a part for Laundry Day, how are you thinking about the fretboard?
I do not think of it in the cage system at all. And I get a lot of TikToks about that. And I'm like, I wish I could think about it like this a little bit more, but I just can't. I genuinely just know. I'm pretty good about knowing which notes are where. I've put in my time. But I just think about it in terms of I can hear it, and I just do it based on what I hear and what I know is going to happen. And I don't think about what notes are right or wrong.
So you just know because you've just spent so much time.
I've just spent so much time that I know.
Playing around.
If I'm here. I know it, what happens if I go there. I know what happens if I go there. And then the best is when I forget or I don't know, and then I play that. It's either right or wrong, and that's when cool things happen.
But you've never thought, oh, my God, maybe I should learn the cage system, or you don't need it.
No, I've never thought that.
You've never thought that.
Maybe that's a bit naive, or maybe that's...
I don't know.
I just feel like things like that can box you in sometimes. Especially when we're recording, I feel like those kinds of things can make your playing sound predictable sometimes when you have the same bag of tricks that you keep going back to. And I think like a lot of our guitar parts are just sort of like things that we've figured out sounded good in the moment without sort of the math of it all or the theology of it all, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. Is it crazy that you met this band, that you went to Beacon High School, met the kids
from
Laundry Day? I'm from New York.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to Hastings High School because I grew up in Hastings on Hudson.
Yeah, my dad's best friend lives in Hastings.
Really?
Yeah.
Who is he? Don't give him a plug. No free plug.
No free plugs. Right.
Is it crazy to me that you went to Beacon High School and were at the right place at the right time to meet the guys in Laundry Day? And join the band. This would keep me up at night because what if they hired someone else?
What if
they brought another guitar player in? Is it crazy? Like, how did you really enter this band? I couldn't really figure it out, and I've tried to explore the topic.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't out there?
Well, it's all, we all went to high school together, and we all met at Beacon, and then we joined the band. But, like, how did you get into this band?
Okay, so in New York, you have to, like, apply to high school. So we were all coming from different areas of the city, Jude and Henry from the Upper West Side, sort of from the Midtown area, and then I grew up in Brooklyn. We all ended up going to Beacon, which is in Midtown, and on the first day of school, we all just sort of met each other, and we were part of like this greater friend group that was made up of like 12, 15 kids. And then sort of the first few months of freshman year, Jude really wanted to write a song for his girlfriend at the time, and he knew that Sawyer produced. So he asked Sawyer to help him produce this song that he had like sort of written in his mind, but he couldn't play any instruments. So he had made this sort of garage band track of him singing all the parts. And when they went downstairs to our basement at Beacon, was just all of these like mini studios with Focusrites and mics and MIDI keyboards and Logic. It was like the most amazing place for us. They went downstairs at lunch one day to start recording it, and all of our friends just went because we thought it was cool. And then at the end of the period, it was probably like 25 minutes, Henry and I, I play guitar, Henry plays bass, we stuck around. And we were like, no, we actually play too, and we're really interested in this, and we record music as well. We produce music. And so we finished that song, or they had finished that song or whatever, and then the next one was all four of us. And then 9 years later, 8 years later, we're here.
So you had to, you had the foresight to basically say, I'm going to stick around.
Yeah.
I need to hang. What if you hadn't done that? Isn't that crazy?
I'd like to not think about it.
Thank God you stuck around.
Yeah.
You said, no, I need to play guitar. Because you were what? You were playing guitar in other bands, basically.
Yeah. Our school put together bands for you as part of like after school programs. So I was in a band. Henry was in a band. Sawyer was in a band. But it took like us sort of hanging around and being like, we produce, we rewrite music, and we want to do this with y'all to form the band. And then, like, we were all such good friends anyway that it wasn't like, it was like a no-brainer. And then from there, we made a bunch of songs freshman year, and then sophomore year, we made, like, 3 albums and put them all out in, like, the span of 4 months.
How did you guys tour during high school? That's always so crazy to me that you even had the ability to do that. Because you, especially, I'm assuming, in your senior, junior year, you guys were on the road like every weekend, basically.
Yeah, so junior year, we put out an album called Homesick that like got some attention on the internet. And we realized that we sort of needed to play outside of the tri-state area, which we hadn't done. We'd played in Philadelphia. We played in New Jersey. And so our manager at the time was like, you can't miss school because your parents will kill me. So what we're going to do is...
bad advice.
No,
I don't know.
I mean, that'll change in senior year. But junior year, we flew out on Friday nights. We would play Saturday. Or no. We would fly out Thursday night. We would miss Friday. We'd fly out Thursday night. We would play Friday night. We would play Saturday night in a different place. And then we would fly back Sunday. So for instance, the first time we did it, flew out Thursday night, played in Dallas on Friday, played in Austin on Saturday, and then flew back to New York on Sunday, went back to school on Monday. And that was like our life for like a bunch of months. And then over the summer between junior and senior year, we went on sort of like a full tour where we were gone for like a month. And then by the time we were seniors, we had like a month in Europe with Claro. That was December of our senior year of high school. We did some shows with the 1975. That was a few weeks of November of our senior year. And then COVID hit in March of 2020. And then obviously nobody was touring. So by the end of our high school years, we were missing a substantial amount of school. And that was just sort of what we had to do.
Is it crazy that the album Homesick, so much of that, there's like footage of you guys making all that album. So it's like, the song Friends, for example.
Sure.
Like, there's, like, video of you guys, like, tinkering with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And playing it. Isn't that insane?
It's wild. It's funny you say that. A few weeks ago, I went sort of on a deep dive. Because I can't watch it because it's us.
Yeah.
And like, we were so young and so corny and, like, so little. But I went back and I watched a lot of it. And it's very wild to see. Especially with Friends, because that song is what it is now, and it's like to see the origins of that. Sawyer just sitting at the piano, and us all just sort of like working it out. It's pretty wild.
There's a quote that you said somewhere in, I think it was that documentary, where you basically said, you guys are trying to make your music simpler and simpler.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that mean?
That is still true to this day.
But what does that even mean?
Because we all produce, the way that our first music sounded was 5 people, now it's 4 people. All trying to get every idea they have off in the song, and nothing got cut. So a song would be 3.5 minutes and I would have 7 bass lines because everybody put every idea they had into the song. And that's how we produced for a long time. It would be like, there would be no traditional song structure. It'd be sort of part A, part B, part C, part D. And as we went on, we realized like, that's not how good songs are made. Maybe that's how some interesting songs are made, but we and to this day, last week we were talking about this. We want to make every part as sort of potent as possible, as important as possible, but not overcrowd anything, and make the songwriting really good, make the chords really good, and make it just, I don't know, we use the word classic a lot, which is sort of an arbitrary word, but make everything sound important and not overcrowd the song as much as possible.
How do you do that? Is it just the intent to do it and focusing on it to see if you are doing it, or is it influences you listen to maybe prior to going to record?
Like, that's definitely part of it.
How do you make sure you're doing that?
It's a combination of both. Sawyer always says, like, he calls, you know, when you don't like an idea, he says the dope police, because he's like sort of, you know, someone who's patrolling what's cool and what's not cool. So we try not to like be too self-aware while we're actually recording, which sounds counterintuitive, but kind of like can destroy your spirit a little bit when you're too focused on like whether this is the right direction or not. You kind of just have to see once it's done. But definitely listening to the influences of the people that you want to channel when you're recording, and then also just going into it with an intent to just make something that just have goals for yourself. And I think we've gotten a lot better at not overcrowding, not overcomplicating songs as we've gotten older, and like as our goals have changed for what we want to create. And just making every part sort of stand alone, just be the best it can. And yeah, I think we've gotten better, and we're still getting better to this day.
Are you a Strat guy, would you say?
I'm a Strat guy.
I've seen you play Les Pauls, though, yeah. Too.
I toured with a Les Paul a few years ago. I didn't actually have this Strat at the time. I had a 73 Strat that, to be honest with you, I didn't like and is now sold. But then I got this 2.5 years ago, and I've played it at every single show we've played since then.
This is the one.
This is the one.
This is the number one.
And it's really nothing special. It's from 1993. It's a Japanese Strat. I really like Japanese Strats, especially ones from like the early 90s to the early 2000s. I got it in Syracuse, New York on my 21st birthday. I bought it for myself.
Really? What's the famous music store?
I have no idea what it's called. I'm going to be honest with
it's
you.
It's like House of Music or something.
It was not the huge one. Okay. That's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
It was this very small... all the Syracuse people are going to get upset that I don't remember that.
We're going to blow all of the Laundry Day fans in Syracuse are going to riot.
I know. This is going
to
be bad.
They're not going to come out to the show. But hold on. So you go into the music store, you pick this guitar up, and then, like, what did you play? Like, do you remember, like, did you play something and you go, okay, this had a great, you know, two or four position?
Yeah.
Like, what made you think this was a great guitar?
First of all, I'm a neck pickup guy.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I play 75% of the show on the neck pickup.
Really?
Yeah. And it's funny, like, one time we played this show at, I forget where it was, and I'm also not going to say because then the person will know that I'm talking about them. But the guys that were opening for us, the guitarist came up to me after we played, and he was like, dude, soloing on the neck pickup. And I was like, he said that to me, and I was, like, kind of embarrassed, but also I was like, kind of like, fuck you. Like,
wait, he said it, like,
in a condescending way? Like,
that's ridiculous.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, because I should be able to do whatever I want, and it's like what sounds good, not what is sort of like traditionally acceptable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, solo time, bridge pickup. But, you know, I think that's how he meant it. But at that point, I sort of realized that I do really like the neck pickup. I play the neck pickup most of the time.
Why? Does it just sound fatter to you, or it just feels fatter. More space?
Yeah, yeah.
So you pick up the Strat and you go straight to the neck pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then what do you do? Like, what's your guitar store thing? Like, how do you know this is a good guitar?
I play like a bunch of Laundry songs, if I'm being honest.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because those are just parts that I know so well that I can kind of not think about what I'm playing. I can just sort of think about how it sounds. I remember with this guitar, I played our song Little Bird, and it sounded so good. And I was there because I had like a bunch of time to spare on my 21st birthday, or it was the day before or something. And so I spent like 2 hours playing it. And then at one point, the guy who was working there was like, are you going to buy it?
No, he said that?
Yeah. And I was like, not even in a rude way, just like, you seem like you're really enjoying yourself. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to buy it. And I bought it, and I I've played it every show we've played since. I've played it in Barclays Center. I played it at Madison Square Garden. I played it all over the world.
That's the one. Let's hear the neck pickup. You got to play the neck pickup.
What I did when I picked it up was I played Little Bird.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Which was like...
playing that for 2 hours in the shop. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Maybe for an hour and a half.
Just repeating Little Bird
over and over again.
The guy goes, are you going to buy this thing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's such a great sound.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's what is the guitar sound of Laundry Day? Have you kind of honed in on it? Is it certain effects that you have, or is it just what is in your hands? Like, what is the guitar tone you try to get in Laundry Day?
It's interesting. If you listen to our music, like, our music is not necessarily guitar-forward music, especially, like, a song like Friends. But our newer stuff has, we've sort of tried to implement that more and more, like, Damn Shame DJ or, like, No Go or things like that. It's just, it's fat. It's like, you know, there's sort of Sultans of Swing sounding guitar, and then there's, like, neck pickup playing, and, like, I think for us, because we're producers first, we look at everything sort of like, how can we make the song, every part fit exactly where it needs to? And so it's a lot of just beefy guitars, especially with the song No Go. That was a song that we had for a long time, and then we ended up reworking in my apartment. And that was Sora and I literally just playing two guitars next to each other and figuring out the parts, which is not something that we normally do. Started doing it a little bit more now, but it's just sort of like beefy distorted guitars.
What is the guitar part for Friends?
Friends?
Yeah.
Hold on. It's not that interesting, if I'm being completely honest.
Well, that's what I'm curious about. What do you play though? Everybody wants to know what Henry plays on Friends. Right?
A lot of stuff like that.
That's
I think like the good part about Laundry Day is that we'll write songs and then we'll go right to rehearsing them. And, you know, obviously some bands write that way. We don't. But because we all make the songs so intimately with each other, we all know the rhythm really well. We all know like the key that we're in, and like if there's key changes, we'll know those very intimately. We'll know everything about the song very intimately. So there's all these like natural hits, like in Friends in the middle of the second verse, like there's a part at the live show where there's like this triple hit, like. And so from the first time we ever played that, we got that. And I think that helps our playing a lot, how sort of how involved all of us are in the producing, just because we know the song inside and out. And it helps us just be so much more familiar with it when we start to play it than if, you know, like one or two of us are writing.
What do you mean you got that part? Like you just all played it naturally without even talking about it. You guys just looked at each other and you did those hits and you were like, all right, well, that's now part of the song. Like that's in it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did the song Why Is Everyone a DJ come together? That's got a great kind of rocking guitar part.
Yeah.
How did that get written?
So that's like, we've had that song for a really long time. Came out a year ago, but we had it sort of a few months prior to that. The beginning part is all a sample. It's a sample of a record that Sawyer had. We've sort of realized that we could, we're so dumb sometimes, like we never thought about this, but Sawyer had this record player that we realized we could send to our interface. And he had one random record, and we don't even know what it, I'm not going to say what it was because copyright reasons.
Is that the beginning when it skips? Yeah. It's funny.
That's real.
Like it's skipping. Yeah. Yeah.
That's totally real because it literally skips. And then that intro guitar is all part of the sample on that record.
Oh, that's not even you playing.
It's not me. And then in the song, it's me. From there, we took that sample and tried to recreate it as much as we could. Because, you know, it's an old record and the sound quality wasn't great. And we wanted to sort of beef it up a little bit. And then from there, that's like when the fun happens. The drums, I forget who did the drums. But yeah, the intro, the song is all based off that intro guitar and how we sampled it. And then sort of like, you know, it wasn't resampling, but it was sort of trying to match it as well as we could with what we had. And I think we got pretty close. And then live, it's in the track, but it's just very faintly in the track. It's very widespread, and it just beefs it up a little bit. But I'm playing the part live.
What's the part? We got to hear the part.
So it's all based around this sort of like,
yeah,
kind of thing.
That is so great, right? That's such a fun part.
Yeah.
Wait, so did you come up with that part, or that's what was
on
the record?
Well, it's sort of our interpretation of what was sampled on the record.
Yeah.
So that's not exactly what is... In the beginning of the song, you can hear... it's more of like this, like... It's sort of more of like just a pedal chord. And then that was sort of our... I call it resampling because it's not really the same thing, but it was sort of our interpretation of how we had originally sampled that. But it's sort of like the cornerstone of the song that it's sort of da, 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 da. I think of it like very American, like almost like a Bruce Springsteen song. I know it doesn't sound anything like a Bruce Springsteen song, but that's the way I've always thought about it. It's so major and it's so like big. That's always how I've contextualized it. Yeah.
Who are your big guitar influences? Who are the influences?
Who are my influences?
Give me the top five guitar players for Henry Weingartner of Laundry Day.
Of all time?
Yeah, of all time.
Well, so like I started getting really obsessed with guitar because of YouTube. And there would be all these YouTube guitar players that I idolized. Like, did you ever watch Phil X when he was doing the demos?
Well, Phil plays for Bon Jovi.
Yes.
Now, I guess maybe not anymore.
Maybe
but,
not anymore, but he did for a long time.
But he's an amazing guitar player.
He's an amazing guitar player. But like I grew up watching like Rob Chapman and like Captain Lee and Pete Honore and like Phil X and Rob Scallon and all those people on YouTube. So I don't know if I have a top five. I'll try to answer it as well as possible. I'd say John Mayer's definitely in there.
Is he in there? Is that why you picked up the Strat?
I don't know if that's why I picked up the Strat. I think my dad loved John Mayer.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird because it doesn't really match the rest of his musical taste. He's more of like a Mariah Carey guy, which is interesting. But he loved John Mayer. I've seen John Mayer live a bunch of times. He's one of the greatest live. It's no debate. Anybody who says anything negative about him is just a hater.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see the Dead in 2 weeks.
Oh, at the Sphere?
Yeah, at the Sphere. I'd say Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'd say he's why I picked up the Strat more than John, just because I knew about him before I knew about John. I'm going to throw Phil X in there because
he's a great guitar player.
And he also taught me so much about guitar because watching those reviews that they weren't even really reviews. They were sort of just demos.
He had such a funny energy.
He had a great energy.
Yeah.
He made me so excited about guitar. And then I'm going to throw like some new people in there. Chris Buck. You know Chris Buck?
I don't know if I'm familiar with Chris Buck.
Chris Buck's incredible.
Yeah.
Everybody, Chris Buck, I forget what his Instagram is, Chris Buck something.
Does he play in a band?
Yeah, he plays in a band. I'm blanking on the name of the band, but his Instagram is incredible. He's an amazing
guitar
player.
Chris Buck.
Chris Buck. He's like, he is unbelievable.
I gotta get him on the show.
You have to get him on the show.
Oh my God.
And then another internet guy who is unbelievable is Jake Lake. I think L-A-I-K. And he's a guy I found on TikTok. Really bluesy style. But he is unbelievable. And he makes his own music, and it's really great. He's every single thing that I see him play is absolutely perfect. I admire his style so much. And so, yeah, who did I say? I don't even remember who I said, but I'm standing by my list.
No Mark Knopfler, though.
No.
But you said Dire Straits earlier as a tone influence, maybe, sure. for Laundry Day.
I think I meant that more so. I think of Mark Knopfler as like the ultimate bridge pickup guy. Am I wrong about that?
You think I would almost say the two or four position when I think
right of, the four position
the four
I guess.
Position
the
like,
four
when
position
I think of Dire
yeah.
Straits
I think you're
of
right
that, like quacky kind of
right
pickup sound.
Exactly I think yeah, you're yeah, right yeah. about that maybe it's the four, and I think like we sort of realize that within like the way that we produce and the way that we write songs, the one or two is going to work for us better than the four or the five.
Yeah.
So I love Mark Knopfler. But he didn't make my top five today. Maybe tomorrow he'll make
maybe
it.
Maybe tomorrow he'll yeah. make it. But who were there bands that influenced what the sound of Laundry Day is? Like, to me, I don't know if it's just the New York connection, but I always feel like there's like a Strokes influence.
Absolutely.
There's like, what is the influence from the Strokes on Laundry Day?
The Strokes are the ultimate example of what we were talking about earlier, where every part is necessary and there's no overcrowding. Julian's voice is incredible. And every part needs to be there. There's nothing unnecessary on any of their songs. And then the parts are iconic. We covered Reptilia for a while, and then we stopped doing it because we kind of felt a little corny at a certain point. But for us to be doing it, not for them to be doing it. But they're the best. And they are pure New York rockers. I think the Beatles, absolutely, for everyone, should be an influence. And then when we were in high school, our main influences, and I think whether we think about it or not, are bands that we listened to in high school, because it was sort of the foundation of our friendship, the foundation of the band. So a lot of 1975, and then that's when we toured with them, when they had put out A Brief Inquiry. That's one of our main influences and will forever be. The way they make rock music, but it's so modern. Everything is so well done. Yeah, they'll forever be one of our biggest influences. I'm trying to think who else. The Beastie Boys, I think, you know, New York energy.
Chili Peppers.
Chili Peppers. Yeah, Chili yeah, Peppers. Yeah. I think, you know, like we're a four-piece now. For a long time, we were a five-piece. And then our drummer left, and Sawyer, who was playing keys and guitar, moved to drums.
Isn't it better to be a four-piece? There's more money to go around. That, isn't that the case?
That's true.
Isn't that the truth in four-piece bands versus five-piece
listen,
bands?
Listen, there's definitely more money because there's one less guy that you need to share it with. But I think Sawyer moving to drums was amazing for a lot of reasons. He's an incredible drummer. He's incredible at all of the instruments that he plays, and he's an incredible singer. But it kind of gives our show a little bit more dynamic because Sawyer sings while he drums, which is really cool. And, like, you know, you don't really see that many people doing that. And I think it sort of changed how we viewed our sound. I think like before we were trying to make it sound exactly like the record, or actually, you know what, I take that back, not exactly like the record, because our show is a lot more rocky than a lot of our songs are, but we wanted it to sound, you know, very full. Our worst nightmare was our show sounding too thin, and I think now we've sort of just embraced, like, what I think the my point being, what I think the Chili Peppers have done so well is embraced being the four piece that you are. And I think a lot of times when I watch the Chili Peppers, you can hear that it's just drums, bass, and guitar. And I think that's really cool. And I love how much they embrace that. As opposed to some bands who, like, are very track heavy or have extra players with them, which I know they do sometimes. But, I think they've influenced our live show a lot recently.
Do you have to think about adapting your parts from the record to the live show?
Absolutely.
To make them, like, what is there a part that's adapted significantly to sound a little fuller in the live show than maybe it does on the record?
There's nothing that I can play live that'll be more full than what's on the record because, well, in, except for like an example like Friends, where, you know, there's guitar in that song, but I've sort of created a part for myself.
For the live version.
For the live
That's
version.
That's different than what's on the
record. What's on the record, yeah. But the way that we record, it's like a lot of layers.
That's what I mean. Like, you get to layer live, do you have to adjust the part?
Oh, you're saying make it sort of
different live so that it fills more space than maybe what a single part is on the record.
Yeah, so like we have a song called No Go, and on the record, the chorus part is these, it's like a D to A to E sort of hit section. And on the record, it's like three or four guitars stacked on top of each other, different voicings playing the exact same thing, and then an acoustic guitar doing it and a piano doing it. And live, we don't have the luxury. I mean, we played a track, but we're not a very track heavy band. And when you saw us the other day, we didn't even have it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the beauty of it. It's like sort of a take it or leave it kind of thing for us. But live, I've sort of just had to like crank it out.
Yeah. What's the live sound?
Which is just like me trying to be as loud and nasty as possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is not like exactly how it is on the record, but in that part of the song, it just needs that oomph live. And so I think that's a good example of how I sort of need to change dynamically from what's on the song.
Wasn't there a moment when you guys were on the road with the 1975 that didn't you end up like on one of their buses?
Yeah.
And they were like, play us the new record or whatever. And didn't Matt Healy say to you guys, he was like, if you guys keep writing music like this,
you did
like,
your research.
You guys are going to be huge, right? What was that moment? That seems like the greatest moment ever because you guys came up in high school listening to this band, loving the band. Now you're on their bus and they're giving you validation. Like, that's got to be the craziest moment ever, right?
It was of the craziest moments of my life. We played a few shows with them in November of 2019. When we were seniors in high school, obviously idolized them. And at the last show that we played with them, it was in South Carolina. Before either of us played, we were direct support to them. So it was just us and them, which is wild. They were like, come on our tour bus. And I don't want to air out anything that's too private, but on one of their tour buses, they have a full recording studio in the back. Like, looks like the best studio you've ever been in.
Yeah.
And they were like, we hear you have like an EP coming out. Can you play it for us right now? And this was at a time where, what I was saying earlier, our music was not linear whatsoever. It was very sort of experimental, for lack of a better word. And so we sat there for 20 minutes and just listened. It was four songs. They were all like 5 minutes. And we just listened through. And the project sort of went through, and you couldn't really tell when one song started and one song stopped. And it ended, and they were like, Maddie said to us, if you can do that, he basically said, if you can do that and you can write a pop song, like he was referencing our song Harvard, then I don't see why you can't. He said, these are his words, not mine. I don't want to sound like an asshole. But he said, I don't see why you guys can't be big like the Beatles. And people aren't big like the Beatles anymore. I'm not trying to say that I see that in our future. But it was one of the most surreal moments of my life. I think about it all the time.
Is there any bands coming up now in the New York scene that like you get to, I don't know, play mentor to or like kind of give that wisdom back a little bit?
I'm trying to think. Not yet.
You guys are still kind of on the come up. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's tons of bands in New York and tons of bands that I love. And I don't know, like, if I would want to, you know, be that guy. Especially not yet. Like, I'm 23. I think being that guy to anybody who is older than 18 is just kind of like, you know, they don't need me.
What a crazy story, though.
Yeah, it's a very wild story.
That he gave you that confidence, or he gave you that...
Yeah, he put the battery in our back for sure. And then the next month, we were gone from school the entire month with Claro, and we definitely carried that with us through that entire tour. We've carried it with us throughout our entire career, and just held on and kept faith, kept hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, talk to me about what's on your pedal board,
sure.
Because I feel like the people on the internet are going to ask. So we go into a tuner here.
Yeah, My first pedal ever.
Yeah.
My first pedal ever was a tuner. I had it until 1 month ago.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It lasted me 10 years.
Unbelievable.
Right? And it pained me to get a new Boss tuner. Yeah. Because my old one was just, it's special. Been with me since the beginning.
Special.
I have a Fuzz Face. It's the Fuzz Face Mini. Got it on Reverb. I really like it. It's nasty. It's not great clarity wise, I'll be honest. But in terms of just like sort of wrenching out the chords, it does sort of what you need.
Let me
to
hear
do.
It. What like what's the song you might use the Fuzz
that
Face
was
on?
So that
is
was
that the DJ sound?
That's actually the no-go sound. So okay. DJ is the OS2.
Yep.
Which has a little bit more like high end, a little bit more clarity, but
that sounds great, right?
Just
that's
sorta,
a great crunchy
yeah.
rhythm sound even, right?
Totally. The OS2 is the DJ sound. It's kind of classic. It's
perfect.
Exactly.
Right?
And we were, I don't know if you'll cut this in, but we were talking before the podcast started about how I got it for my bar mitzvah.
Literally, so, the bar mitzvah pedal.
Yeah, the bar mitzvah pedal, which you said you had a proverbial sort of bar mitzvah pedal as well.
Yeah, my carbon copy.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? I don't know if you're familiar with Dan Huff. Do you know who Dan Huff is?
No.
He was one of the main session guys in the 80s, 90s. Now he's a big country producer. He played on like Michael Jackson records, Madonna records.
Oh, wow.
But I was doing an interview with him, and his number one pedal on his pedal board was the OS2.
It's beautiful.
And it sounds so good.
Yeah.
And I was like, he could have anything. And that's what he was playing. Don't underestimate Boss. To all you people on the internet.
I could go on a Boss tangent right now if you want me to.
What? Well, you only have two Boss pedals.
I know.
On your, well, three.
Well, I have three.
Three, the Reverb. But you're
so
a Boss fan.
This is not normally there. And it just broke it this past year.
Yeah, Ibanez.
That way, it's just, I use it for slap.
Yep.
And it broke on Saturday.
Oh, we gotta get something fixed.
Actually, I'm not gonna get it fixed, honestly. I didn't really like it very much.
You're gonna get something else.
I'm gonna get something else.
Okay, hold on. So we go into the tuner, into the Fuzz Face.
Into the Fuzz Face. So I sort of do it heavy drive, a little less heavy drive, and then this, which is sort
the
of
Timmy.
The Timmy, which this is the most underrated pedal.
I've been playing Timmys since high school. It's my number one overdrive.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so then
I have a Surf Green Humbucker Timmy.
Okay.
And I have a mini Timmy like that on a flyboard that I have. I've been using Timmy's forever.
All right, then I'm going to shut up.
No. Keep talking about the Timmy. Tell me your take about the Timmy.
It's just, it packs the most punch for such a little guy.
Do you have any idea what that switch does?
Because No idea.
I've never figured
out.
No
idea.
I just keep moving it.
And it doesn't matter.
It doesn't even matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't even matter.
It does not matter, but I've flicked it back and forth and hear no difference.
I think it's a myth.
It might be a
three-way
myth.
Three-way switch.
We had a Juno in our studio the other day, and it had like a modded switch.
Yeah.
And nobody in the studio could tell you what it did.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of the Timmy.
I've been playing a Timmy probably for 12 or 13 years. I know exactly how to set it. I have no idea what the switch does.
Yeah. I sort of gun the EQ.
Yeah.
And then I sort of take the volume and gain back a little bit.
But I think the mini Timmy is actually, the EQs on it are not set like the full size one is.
I think that's true.
Because the regular Timmy, the EQs are set in reverse.
Reverse,
The more you turn, the more you cut.
Yeah.
But I think these are set
these are
more
regular.
Intuitively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I,
yeah.
I played, my friend had a regular one and I did that and he was like, no, it's reverse.
It's reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, that makes no sense, but that's fine.
That's what it is. Okay, so the Timmy.
We have the song called Damn Shame in the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like a little creamy kind of.
Dude, it's great. Holy Grail, do you kind of leave the Holy Grail on?
I leave that on the entire set.
You leave that on the entire set for reverb?
Except for this one part in our song, Girl from Lingaria, which is just.
Because you
I just
gotta
want
be a little
that to
tighter.
Be as dry as possible, yeah.
You just need to be a little tighter.
Yeah.
And then when do you use the Nauticlon?
Nauticlon, when we didn't play with a front of house guy, and it was just a random front of house guy because we do a lot of college shows, I used it when I would solo because I didn't trust the front of house guy to turn me up.
Yeah, you just needed like a big
So I just needed
boost.
Like a big volume boost.
Yeah.
And I actually the way that it's set right now, I wouldn't even have the gain that high. I would just sort of have use it as like a treble and volume boost.
And did you build it?
I did build it. Right? Yeah, I built it.
Was it fun?
It was fun. It was fun. It was fun. It didn't take very long, to be honest.
It was an easy build.
But now we have a front of house guy, and I don't really use it as much.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
This is my favorite pedal I have on my board.
The Boss Reverb.
The Boss Reverb.
Beautiful, right?
Yes.
Killer. So and then good. What's the last thing you have? A delay?
This is one of the first pedals I ever got, and I just haven't taken it off because it does exactly what I want it to do, which is just like a long delay, which is like the little bird thing.
That just fills so much space, right?
Totally.
That's it.
And that's exactly, and then like this is the same kind of vibe where it's just like,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so there's all of these parts of the show where I'm just trying to fill as much space as I can. And so especially with that sort of shimmer reverb thing, that just adds like, it's not even too noticeable, especially when I'm playing on top of it and I'm not just letting it ring out. There's these moments where I just sort of need that extra width or extra sort of sustain. And those two help a lot. So I'll play with that sort of shimmer thing quite a bit just because it so
just
beautifully fills. Yeah, fills space a little
texture
bit.
Texture.
Totally.
To fill in, right?
Which is sort of how we think about like producing the music. Just how can we add that perfect like little amount of texture to make it not too bare, but just bare enough where it's like only the necessary elements.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're wrapping up here with Henry Weingartner of Laundry Day.
Nice pronunciation.
Thank you, Henry. What is, dude, so new album coming out in the summer?
Yeah, that's the goal.
This is
that's
overdue, right?
Yeah, way overdue.
You feel like we're overdue for this record?
Way overdue.
You
way
think
overdue.
So?
Yeah. This is a long time coming.
How many songs are going to be on this album? Are there going to be skits? Like, what's happening?
No skits. No skits this time. That was last album.
Yeah.
And there were a few too many skits on that one.
You think there were too many skits on that album?
Younger Than I Was Before was a bit of a beast.
I like the skits.
Oh, I like them too. First of all, I appreciate that. I like them too. Yeah, this is going to be a different thing. This is going to be more about the music. Just killer songs.
Is this going to be the best record yet?
100%. It already is.
It already is?
Yeah.
Why is it the best record? Yeah, because you just have more experience. You just know how to do it.
Yeah, and honestly, this is going to sound like a weird answer, but for a long time, we didn't let anybody help us with anything, especially making music. We had to do it all ourselves, and we turned down sessions with people that, like, if I told you that we turned it down, you'd be like, what? Are you crazy? And now we've been collaborating so much over the last year and a half that we've realized how stupid we were and how much magic there is to be made in having different people in the studio with you. And so we've had a lot of special people help us with this album. And I think it lets us sort of understand what we want to be doing more when not the entire burden is left upon us. And our collaborators have just made it like the most amazing experience, and we've made some great songs, so I'm excited for that.
And then touring on the album, or
yeah,
that's the plan
at some point.
Do you guys just live on the road,
sort of,
at this point?
Yeah, a little bit. We just finished our last college show of the season. College shows are the best because college kids are the best. They're just, all they want to do is have fun, and so we do that a lot. We just finished our last show for a while is next Monday. We're playing halftime at Knicks Celtics game 4.
Oh, that's gonna be sick.
It's gonna be
right?
Sick. Yeah, this will be out by the time the Knicks have already lost the series, which is super disappointing. But
that's gonna be so fun.
Or they've won the series, craziest sort of upset ever, and I'm laughing at myself and I'm super
excited.
Give
two versions. We cut it together.
This will come
what
out
happens
by the time the Knicks have already won the series. So we're
we'll put that in. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And then we're just sort of finishing the album. Yeah. From then on.
Dude, I gotta get into a band. How fun is it to be in a
band? Yeah, you could join our band.
Can I join the band?
Yeah, you
guys
join.
Lost a player, I'll come on in. What would I do in the band?
What do you want to do? You want to play guitar?
Yeah, but you're the guitar player. I don't have any other talent, though. It's all I can do is play guitar.
We could both play guitar. We'll make room for each
other. We'll make room for it?
Yeah,
don't joke with me here. I'm going to show up at band
practice,
you could, ready to join laundry.
Yeah, you ready
day,
to show up at complete?
Yeah, I'll play the songs down.
All right.
I'm going to play your parts, though.
Okay.
And you're,
I have to find new parts.
You have to find new parts.
All right,
I'm not going to adjust to what you're doing.
Okay, that's
fine. I'm going to come in and just do you. I don't know. That could be great.
That works.
No, I can't join a band. I got my own stuff going on. But I've always wanted to be in a band.
I will say this.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing in the
entire
world.
It's the greatest thing in the world, right?
It's the best
thing. What are the odds that you're in a band? It's unbelievable.
And I will say, like, I'm very lucky because we love each other so much.
Yeah.
Like, we've been doing this for... I've seen them every day of my life for almost 8 years. And I intend on seeing them today, and I will see them tomorrow, and I'm happy about that.
What are you gonna do today? You're gonna go like me up
do you want to actually know what I'm gonna do
yes
today?
I want to know.
I'm gonna take this back to my apartment, and I'm gonna go help Sawyer build a bed.
Why does he need a bed?
His bed broke and he needs to get a
why
new
was
bed.
His bed breaking this is
he has he had an old bed that this is so crazy that I'm saying this but he not because it's interesting because it's uninteresting He had an old bed from somebody, and then it broke. And then he went to IKEA this morning, and I'm going to go help him build a bed.
Do you guys have any other friends outside of the
no.
band?
No.
It's just the band. You just hang out with the band.
We do, but
do you have any friends that are your friends? And, like, do you have anyone that you're exclusively friends with and not, and the band is not friends with?
That's a good question. Sure, a few people. But because we've known each other for so long, we went to high school with each other. We had all the same friends in high school. Now we have all the same friends now. But yeah, I have.
Name one friend.
I ran into Felix Hartley the other day.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. I hope he's watching this.
Okay, Felix.
Yeah.
It's Felix.
Felix's kid I went to elementary school with. That was a bad example because I don't really know him as much anymore. But
I would imagine the best part about being in a band is you can like go back to high school and be like, look at me, I'm in a band, I'm famous. But like you guys, I maybe can't do that because you're too close to everyone, or everyone knows.
It's also not really our vibe to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. At least me, I try to be as modest as possible.
Why would you be modest when you're in a band? That's the best part about being in a band.
Because you just sort of let it speak for itself. I don't know.
Let it speak for itself.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Why is there no ego attached? I feel like you guys could have big egos if you wanted.
The reason there's no ego is attached because we have each other. We keep each other in check.
That's the honest answer.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever. We talk to people who are solo artists all the time, and they have nobody to keep them in check with about anything. And we live so close to each other, both, I mean, in a geographical sense, but also just in like a spiritual and emotional sense, that like we keep each other grounded. We keep each other level-headed.
So Jude does something douchey or the other Henry does something douchey
and
you go, what are you doing? Shut the fuck up. Like, is that what the dynamic is like?
I'd say it's more like that than it is sort of letting them do whatever they want, letting anybody do whatever they want to do. I think we try to keep everybody sort of a team player we'll try to do that for as long as we can.
But to be
honest with you, like, it's not even really like that. There's no really patrolling that needs to be done. We're pretty good.
Why do you guys think so many bands struggle with this, though? Is there a dynamic that you think lets you guys not, you know, that makes you guys grounded or makes you guys feel super confident with each other?
Just, we've been doing it for too long to let our friendship slip up. It's more about the friendship than it is about the band. Because that's the basis of the band. That's the core of the band, is how much we love each other, how much we enjoy spending time with each other. It would be impossible to do this if we didn't genuinely love each other. I think other bands have those issues for plenty of reasons. I think when you're not as close as we are, you don't care as much about what anybody else thinks, especially the people that are the closest to you, which is odd because it's so not like that for us. But, you know, there's plenty of examples where bandmates haven't known each other since they were 14. And so there isn't that much of a bond there. It's more of a casual thing. And then when you get big, it's sort of like, you know, that's just a guy that I've known for a year and a half. I don't care what he thinks. I'm going to act however I want. For us, it goes so much deeper than that, and I hope it stays the same.
This is why I'm not in a band, because Laundry Day's in it for the friendship. I'm in it for the money.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. That's not true.
That's not true.
Henry Weingartner, guitarist from Laundry Day. We're wrapping up here. Play us out with something. But you know what song is probably my favorite Laundry Day song?
Oh, yeah.
Is The Bus. But that doesn't have like some crazy
guitar part. That's like this. Like...
Beautiful. And then what's the solo? You play the melody.
Oh,
do you play the solo? Dude, you got a great feel on the guitar. You sound great. Yes.
I haven't played that in a long time.
I love that
song. I'm glad that I was able to figure that out.
That's my favorite Laundry Day song.
Oh, that's so nice.
I think the hook or the part that Jude sings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so like funny or funky compared to the verse.
Sure.
I love that song.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Henry from Laundry Day. They've got a new album coming out this summer. Be on the lookout for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They will have already played the Knicks halftime show.
Of the winning series.
Of the winning series by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
Here's what we've learned today. We've learned a lot. We've learned that friendship goes a long way.
That's it.
In keeping a band together.
That's it.
That's the answer to Laundry Day's longevity.
Yep.
Their future success. It's going to be friendship.
All jokes aside, that is true. That's the headline.
That's the headline. Yeah. That's it. We've learned that this guitar right here was bought in Ithaca.
Syracuse, but close.
Syracuse. New York, upstate. It's all the same.
All the same.
I'm going to get killed for that.
Geneseo.
Syracuse.
That's where
this
I was this weekend.
There you go. This guitar was bought there. It's his number one. He's a Strat guy.
I'm a Strat guy. Although I did just buy, I know we're running over time, but I did buy a few weeks ago. We were in Houston. And I bought a Harmony Rocket from 1968. Wow. And I've been playing that a lot.
That might make an appearance.
Yeah, I was debating bringing it today, but I was like, this is my...
The Strat's got to go. My boy, the Strat's got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Henry, dude, you sound great, man.
Thank you.
You guys sound awesome.
Appreciate it. It's weird playing alone. I practice alone, but playing the Laundry Day songs alone, it's better when I'm with my boys.
Dude, next time we'll do it with the boys.
We'll do it with everyone.
We'll do a full band
here
at Melrose Sawyer Podcast.
Sawyer would love to talk about his drums.
Oh, let's do it. How about that?
He would love that.
All right, we're wrapping up here. Any final thoughts? Did we leave anything out? Anything unsaid?
What did we leave out?
Any guitar things we need to plug?
Any guitar things? Guys, I'm getting into Strymon. Please don't comment that.
You're getting into Strymon?
Yeah.
Like you're getting Strymon pedals?
I'm going to get a Strymon pedal.
What are you going to get?
I don't know yet.
Well, why the...
Henry just got a Deco.
Okay.
For his
great
bass,
delay pedal.
And it sounds really good.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm going to get.
You got to get a timeline, dude.
If you
get a timeline, you got
to... I'm going to have to knock some stuff
off. You're
going
to have to rework this entire board.
Well, I could put the Zuma on the back.
You could put the power underneath.
Yeah.
And then if you ditch the Ibanez and the delay that you've had your entire life,
I can't ditch that. I'll figure it out.
I think the timeline would do it, though.
That's true. I might be able to replace it.
You might be able to replace it.
Yeah. I'm going to figure something out, but before you comment, no Strymon, I'm getting to it. Just give me a break.
Give it a second.
Give it a second. Please.
Internet. He's going to get a Strymon pedal on his board.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
I'm wondering, I'm trying to think of anything else I have, but this has been such a wonderful time. Thank you for having me.
Henry, thanks for coming on, man.
Appreciate it. We'll do it.